Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
We're brothers from New Hampshire. We're venture capitalists.
This is Dusty and Cam in the morning.
I'm sick of that. Let's be from Vermont, and let's have an emerging maple syrup conglomerate.
With Dusty Hera.
Stupid. We don't know anything about maple syrup.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
I happen to know everything there is to know about maple syrup. I love maple syrup. I love maple syrup on pancakes. I love it on pizza. I like to take maple syrup and put a little bit in my hair when I've had a rough week. What do you think holds it up, slick?
Dusty and Cam on 1080.
I'd like to be pimps from Oakland or cowboys from Arizona, but it's not Halloween. Grow up, Peter Pan.
The Fan.
All right, hour number two, Dusty and Cam in the morning. Thank you for being a part of our morning and letting us be a part of yours. All right, coming up at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, Kyle Bonagura, ESPN's Pac-12 writer. He will be joining us to discuss the latest on the Pac-12 and the college football landscape as it's getting hairy out there, folks, in the world of college football, man. It does not look like it is trending in the right direction for a season to be played, not just at the FCS level, where we're waiting to hear from Bruce Barnum, head coach of the Portland State Vikings, who'll join us because the Big Sky over the weekend announced that they would cancel the season, move it to the spring. But we saw on Saturday, the MAC announced that they are canceling their fall football season and they are moving it to the spring, the very first Power Five conference to do so. And that sent a ripple effect of, okay, we need to reassess where we're at and how we're approaching things. And when the MAC, which has the same footprint as the Big Ten, if you look at it, you know, the MAC is consisted of a lot of Ohio schools, Eastern Michigan, right? You have Buffalo is in MACtion. And the Big Ten is sitting there, and their university presidents took inventory and said, wait a minute, if they're not doing it, what are we doing here? And the MAC and the Big Ten, they are both FBS, but I've said this so many times and so often, they play on different planets, right? The MAC and the Big Ten from a funding perspective are on different planets and different stratospheres. And that is something where the MAC said, we can't do this safely with our financials in the way they are. We're not cutting $50 million checks to each school every year because of our TV rights deals. That's just something that we're not able to do. And funding, you know, the testing policies and protocols and getting those standards in place, that's a very tough thing to do. Well, the Big Ten presidents are sitting there going, we're going to have thousands of kids potentially coming back to campuses across our footprint. Is this the right thing to have a college football season? If you look at the reports that are out there, overwhelmingly, it feels as if the Big Ten presidents do not want to play a college football this season, this fall. They do not want it.
Yeah, that is. Those are the reports coming out that the leadership within the conference is moving that direction.
And that is a major concern for the rest of the Power Five because it just takes one, right? We've seen and this is all it takes, right? We saw it during the men's basketball tournament. The Ivy League said, "Yeah, we're not doing this," and then everybody went boom, 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 fell in line. Ivy League does it again with football, saying we're going to move to the spring. Mm-hmm. They were the first ones to do it. And then you saw lower levels of football saying, all right, yep, spring it is, boom, boom, boom. That is going to be the most feasible direction for us to go in. Well, now with the Power Five, we saw it took the Big Ten to say, we're playing conference only. That's what we're doing. Pac-12 follows the next day. SEC follows in the same line. The Big 12 and the ACC are playing their conference schedules, and then they're plus ones in a non-conference. But guess what? It ain't looking like there's going to be anybody for them to play in that plus one non-conference, right? Whether you want to play an FCS program where, you know, the Big Sky's move may actually push everybody else to, they can't qualify to have a championship at the FCS level now.
Right.
Because they don't have 50% of the FCS teams participating this year. So by the NCAA rules, they're saying that doesn't qualify for a championship to be held. So in the next coming days, we could see the other conferences in the FCS go, all right, yeah, we're going that way as well. And mind you, the two of the conferences that have pushed to the spring at the FCS level are two of the best ones, the Big Sky and the Colonial. Right? James Madison, Richmond is in the Colonial, Towson is in the Colonial. Like, they are usually have very good programs coming out of there. And obviously here in the Big Sky, it's like the SEC of FCS football. So the ripple effect is coming. We had an emergency conference call last night with Power Five commissioners, and they want to have a unified voice out of all of this.
Which is tough, because it feels like that's probably where this should have been all along, is trying to find a unified voice within the Power Five. But it seems like now in the 11th hour, this is almost getting assembled because they realize the season is on kind of a flat line here. And it's, I feel like it is good for them to all have a unified front, but I've also seen reports that they kind of tried that before maybe, and they couldn't agree on non-front conference games and how they were going to administer those, and that basically they couldn't get on the same page with some of that stuff. So the thought of them getting on the same page with all of this is a little less likely maybe.
Well, and this is where everybody has that fear. And we talked about this when the Big Ten went to their 10 game conference only schedule, when they announced that. When they announced that, it was like the brakes were just put on, and everything came to a stop, right? And we heard immediately that the ACC and SEC kind of felt betrayed by the Big Ten, because they were supposed to all make these decisions together.
Yeah.
And all of the reports that you're seeing from, you know, I think it was Heather Dinich. It was either Heather Dinich or Nicole Auerbach said this last night, that nobody wants to be the first conference of the Power Five to say, no, we're not going to do this. If they do it, they all want to do it together. And because if you're the first one to do it, who's to say the SEC just goes, screw this, man, we're still going to play.
Right. And there are reports that there's even just some dissension there, that, like you said, the Big Ten may be leaning towards not playing. The Pac-12 could potentially be in that boat as well. I saw reports this morning that people think that it's kind of Big Ten, Pac-12 on one side, with the ACC and Big 12 a little bit up in the air, and the SEC being like, we're going.
Yeah. Pat Forty, he had this nugget where he said, you know, it's gotten to critical stage. I think all of us will be meeting with our boards in the coming days. We have work to do that is no fun when talking to an administrator in college football. It doesn't look good, but here's the problem where it all kind of is also coming to a head, is that you have a pandemic where you don't know if your protocols are in place are going to be stringent enough. You aren't funded like Major League Baseball,
or you
NBA,
can afford to have protocols in NFL, place that are stringent enough.
100%. You have that going against you. But if everybody is in line with it and everybody is moving in the same direction and pulling in the same direction, then you can justify, hey, everybody feels comfortable, everybody is in lockstep in heading in the right direction. That is not the case, because what we saw yesterday was another landmark move on behalf of players in college sports.
Yeah.
And we've heard about the hashtag We Are United. Can we just call it We Are United? Can I not say hashtag in the front of it? Because that's what it is. It's just We Are United.
Yeah,
The Pac-12 players started that, and they made some pretty absurd and outlandish demands. And there's over 400 players, like 50% of revenue split. And then they had some common sense issues that they wanted addressed by Larry Scott, the Pac-12, their universities, and the NCAA as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys all met with Larry Scott in a conference call, and it went sideways. The initial reports are that it was productive and cordial. well, the players have a bigger voice than ever. And they came out and they talked to the New York Times and they said it was not cordial. We felt like Larry Scott was dismissive.
That's the word I read, dismissive.
He called it a PR, misguided PR stunt, what they were doing.
How do you let that happen? How do you let that happen at this point in time? Not take your players seriously right now.
And he accused players of talking out of both sides of their mouth when they wanted him to clarify on, so you will allow us to use some of the university facilities, but not others. Like, and there was a follow-up to, okay, so what ones, if we opt out of the season, which facilities can we use and which we can't use? And that was apparently perceived by Larry Scott as talking out of both sides of your mouth. And
that seems like a reasonable question to ask.
Right.
And it might not even be one that he can answer, but I'm not sure where that accusation comes from him.
Well, exactly, because what the student wants to know is, all right, so you're going to honor our scholarship, but not honor parts of it. And I would want clarification on that as well. And I understand that, but
it might not be the sticking point, but it sounds like the bigger issue is overall how he reacted and conducted himself during it.
Absolutely. And you had, you know, two athletic directors, a AD at Utah and the AD at Arizona State were also on the call, as well as another Pac-12 administrator on the call with the players and the player. And granted, the New York Times story is only one side because the Pac-12 did not release a comment on it. It was strictly from the players' side of it. And when they asked the Pac-12, they had no comment on the matter. And I don't think they said no comment. They just didn't respond back. And so you have this issue with the Pac-12 growing, the Big Ten followed suit, the Mountain West followed suit with their own players. And then last night we saw a movement of, we want to play. We want to play, and we are united, joined forces yesterday. And this could be the real game changer, because it's not just one conference. All five conferences have players united and moving in one direction. And it's not as outlandish as the list of demands the players of the Pac-12 had issued. It is pretty common sense, and it could lead to troubles for having a fall season in college football. We'll break down what they are asking for and how feasible it is. We are united and we want to play are one cohesive group now, and all five conferences are unified in it. Dusty and Cam on the Fan. All right, 719, Dusty, Hera, Ryan Buckley, Cam's on vacation. We are talking college football, and we're waiting to hear from the head man of the Portland State Vikings, Bruce Barnum, coming up at some point here. He's officially on the clock. But we're talking about college football and the fact that, you know, the Big Sky, we saw them on Friday cancel their college football season in the fall and move to the spring. Then the MAC did it on Saturday. And now you have Power Five commissioners scrambling and having a conference call yesterday. University presidents of the Big Ten having a conference call yesterday to see, is this worth it? And can we have a unified voice? And one of the big parts is that if everybody was pulling in the same direction, right, we wouldn't be in this situation. If the players felt safe, the coaches felt safe, administrators and, university presidents, they all felt like everything was being handled the right way. But one of the big factors that's going into this is now this push from student athletes saying, you know, we feel that maybe our school, and this is the case with like Oregon and Clemson and Ohio State, they're saying our universities are handling this the right way, but we have to play schools on our schedule where we don't know if they are. And some of them don't necessarily feel safe with all of the protocols that are in place. So we just want it to be mandated that there is uniformity across the board. And one thing that I thought was interesting in the New York Times article is that apparently Larry Scott told the We Are United Pac-12 front that he can't mandate it. All they can have is guidelines that they put in place.
That essentially he can tell the schools what they want them to do, but it'll ultimately be up to the schools themselves, correct?
That is correct. Well, from what I gathered.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, that is the view of what the student athletes heard on that conference call.
Yeah.
But then yesterday we saw in the morning, we want to play, hashtag we want to play was put out, and it caught like wildfire across social media. And it was guys either just saying hashtag we want to play and that was it. And there were some guys that were making very good points. And college football's brightest stars, Trevor Lawrence. He is a guy that will, in all likelihood, be the number one pick in next year's draft. He's a national champion quarterback and a national runner-up at quarterback. And he had a three-tweet stream that, you know, it's been said on this show quite often that even with the guidelines and not mandates, a lot of the student athletes that are heading to these college campuses are safer there than they would be if they're at home.
Yeah.
And Trevor Lawrence said players being safe and taking all the right precautions to try to avoid contracting COVID because of the season slash teammate safety is on the line. Without the season, as we've seen already, people will not social distance or wear masks and take the proper precautions. Not to mention the players coming from situations that are not good for them slash their future and having to go back to that. Football is a safe haven for many people. We are more likely to get the virus in everyday life than playing football. Having a season also hasn't incentivizes us. People are just as much, if more, at risk if we don't play. Players will all be sent home to their own communities where social distancing is highly unlikely and medical care and expenses will be placed on the families if they were to contract COVID-19. Now that, to me, I sit there and I go, I agree with that. I agree with what Trevor Lawrence is saying there. And it is safer for a lot of these guys, and not all of them.
He raises a ton of great points, though. And that's the thing that I think has been so difficult with this entire pandemic all along, is that for everyone individually, it's going to be a little bit different. But so it's hard to paint with a broad brush and say this is how it affects everyone. But I do think that he makes a lot of salient points, and he says a lot of things there that you can buy into and say, yeah, I can see how that would be true.
Yeah. And he is saying, like, can we all just work together and not divide and argue because there is a way forward? And that is very true. And that's what these student athletes are trying to figure out, is there a way forward? And we want to play. We had a lot of guys bring up a lot of really great points, and kind of many of them were saying just kind of what football will mean to them. And like, some guys were like, dude, just, I wouldn't mind if you put us all in quarantine and locked us up, made us go to class online, and then we just went out and played. I want to play football. And that is something that is a prevalent point across college football, but doing it safely is the most important part. And that is where the We Are United, the Pac-12 front, and the We Want to Play, they put out a graphic last night, and guys, the big stars of college football are the ones that were associated with it. Justin Fields, the quarterback from Ohio State, Trevor Lawrence at Clemson, a lot of Duck players as well. They put out a statement that said, we all want to play football this season. Establish universal mandated health and safety procedures and protocols to protect college athletes against COVID-19 among all the conferences throughout the NCAA. Give players the opportunity to opt out and respect their decision. Guarantee eligibility whether a player chooses to play the season or not. And use our voices to establish open communication and trust between the players and officials. Ultimately, create a college football players association, representative of the players of all Power Five conferences. There is a lot of things that you just sit there and you go, yes, because when we go to work, right, don't we want to feel safe, as safe as we possibly can, and
absolutely
know that our workplace is doing that?
I mean, show me where on that list is something unreasonable from them.
Well, a lot of folks are pointing to the final bullet point. I don't think the universal health and safety procedures and protocols, I don't think that anybody scoffs at that. I mean, that I don't think that that is something that people are just like, ah, no, how could you want that? No, that is something that we all want, right? We do. The opportunity for players to opt in and opt out and respect their decision. I think a lot of the conferences are going in that direction, but they just want it to be, hey, every conference on the same page.
Yeah.
And then guaranteeing eligibility, whether they choose to or not. So basically a free redshirt year if you opt out. I don't think that that is an unreasonable request.
No.
Because other professional sports are doing that. And we have seen that conferences are saying, yeah, no, your scholarship will be honored. Okay. We get that and we understand that. So I think the ball is already moving in that direction. The big one, though, is that the ultimately create a college football players association is a big one. It could be a sticking point, and that's where this whole thing could kind of start to fall apart. And this is a really good tweet thread from Alicia Jessup, who is a sports law professor at Pepperdine. And she also writes on sports law for The Athletic and Washington Post. Okay. She pointed this out, and I think just hearing this out is an important factor here. It says, all right, as college football players across the U.S. have suddenly banded together in the We Want to Play movement, those calling for widespread unionization of college group must understand that law governing unionization in the U.S. makes that unlikely. The National Labor Relations Act was passed in 1935 to provide workers returning to employment after the Great Depression protections. It provides U.S. employees of private employers the right to unionize. Key words: 1, private employer; 2, employees. In 2014, Northwestern football players on scholarship filed a petition to unionize. The National Labor Relations Board used the right to control test to determine or to deem their employees who could vote to unionize. It is notable that this part of the NLRB's ruling was never overturned. So they did give them the right to vote on it. Okay. That's an important factor here. But she goes on to say, however, the National Labor Relations Board ruled that despite Northwestern players on scholarship being employees, they could not vote to unionize because of the NCAA's focus on competitive balance. And herein lies the issue. We are united athletes face in forming their union under the NLRA. The issue is We Are United athletes forming a union is there are 128 schools in the FBS, but not all of them are private schools. They grant the right to unionize employees of private employers. It would apply to athletes at the state schools as well. Thus, what is likely to emerge from this is not a union, but a non-union organization, likely organized as a nonprofit, as NCAA athletes begin to secure their name, image, and likeness, and group licensing becomes a priority for them. They'll need this to grow. That is a lot to unpack, right?
Yeah, but I think that on the surface, it makes a lot of sense that there are legal issues with creating a union, but that there is a possibility here to still have a unified body with a unified voice that speaks with officials from the conferences, from the universities, and the NCAA.
And this is where I laid on this thing from the get-go, We Are United front started. It is... When the Pac-12 players came to it, they should not get everything that they asked for because they shot for the moon and whatever. Go ahead and do that in your initial thing. But having a unified voice for college athletes across all of the Power Five is a good thing, right?
Agreed.
Will they be a decision maker? No. But having something, and I said it at the time, which is
they're not taking control of all of this. That's the thing. Right. People think that that this is the athletes taking over. They're not. They just want a seat at the table.
And this is where I go, it's not a union as in we look at the NFL, NBA, MLB unions, right? And professional sports unions where they're negotiating, you know, revenue splits, and the We Are United thing made it sound like that's what they wanted to do. But if you throw that part out of it and you just have as Ms. Jessup points out, if you have a situation where it's just a nonprofit alliance of athletes, it's not a union. Is that a bad thing for college athletics? No.
I'm not sure how it would be.
Would it be a detriment to the amateur model? No, it would not, because what they would be doing is not negotiating salaries for their athletes. It's name, image, and likeness and group licensing, which group licensing would be a great thing because then everybody benefits, not just the star players from that name, image, and likeness. And I look at that and I go, yeah, that is a good thing. Now, Trevor Lawrence is spearheading it. And guys, like, if you looked at the article, what happened was this all just started on social media last night.
Yep.
Like a running back from Clemson was talking with Trevor Lawrence, and then he reached out to one of the Stanford players on a DM and Twitter and was like, hey, can we talk about what you guys are doing? And he said, sure. Then, according to a report from ESPN, they got every single conference on board. Justin Fields from Ohio State was on it. They had players from the ACC, SEC, Big 12, Pac-12, including Penei Sewell, Kayvon Thibodeau, Johnny Johnson, Javon Holland from the University of Oregon. They were all on that call of the Power Five guys saying, all right, if we're going to just pare this thing down, what is the most important thing for us? And they came down to what I read you at the beginning of this, which was health and safety protocols across the board, a guarantee of we can opt out and be safe, an extra year if you do choose to opt out, and eventually we want to have an alliance of players who have a voice that are together. And that is where college football may have had this whole thing unravel for the fall season, because the Power Five commissioners are scrambling to see if that is something feasible and something they can do in such a short order. Games are supposed to start in some conferences at the beginning of the month, next month. And can you do it in that time? Or do they push it all back to the spring? There's going to be big decisions being made over the next day and day or two, because they're meeting today, the conference commissioners, and tomorrow to figure out a plan on how to move forward. It's starting. Fall camps have started in some places. And look, the Pac-12, I think, is reporting next week. 503-250-1080. Where does the Pac-12 and where does college football go from here? Dusty and Cam on the Fan. All right, 503-250-1080. That's a Fan text line. Dusty Hera. Ryan Buckley with me on this Monday morning. It's big movement happening. We want to play and we are united. Two separate entities joining forces of college athletes asking for health and safety mandates across college football. And they want to eventually get a Players Association of College Athletes together. That is the main goal, spearheaded by Trevor Lawrence of Clemson, Justin Fields of Ohio State. And here's the interesting part is just over the weekend, Ohio State, they had a release that their student athletes were not part of the Big Ten's We Are United front with demands on safety protocols, because they said, hey, we feel our school is doing all the right things here. And boy, has that changed when your quarterback jumps on board with this one, which they just want overarching mandates across to all of college football. And this is where the issue of does a season happen in college football? It is trending in the way, in the direction of no, not in the fall, not in the fall. It looks like it's bumping back towards the spring. And this text says, you know, the issue is the liability. If the players come in, get sick and have a complication or die, the schools will be sued and they're trying to figure out how to avoid it. And I don't think there's a legal or sound way to do it. Well, yeah, that is a massive one. And that's why you had, you know, in the part of the Pac-12's list of demands was having some sort of legal representation if we do have to sign a liability waiver, right? And these are the big questions that the players in the We Wanna Play, when they were tweeting that out, like they were like, football means so much and we will feel safer on campus and we will in our home cities. That is an important thing that people can't just dismiss or overlook.
Right, just because a lot of us probably feel as comfortable as we will at home right now, that's not the case for everybody.
No, it isn't. And a lot of these student athletes, the one thing that they want is like, all right, just make sure the school that we're lining up across is on the same platform and same board as we are.
And that seems pretty reasonable.
It does. It does. But that is an insanely hard thing to try and figure
out. No one said it was going to be easy, but that's, you know, you wish that that's what they were all working towards from the beginning. And it's great that this has legs now, but they got to get it in gear.
The wheels in this have been in motion for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
2014, Northwestern went to the National Labor Relations Board and they fought to unionize and they had the right to vote to unionize. If you do not think that a student athlete is an employee of that university, it's kind of wild because although they weren't getting a weekly paycheck, they're getting stipends, they're getting scholarship, and they're asked to do a hell of a lot of work for a lot of revenue towards that business. And that business is the athletic department. Like, make no bones about it. Like, I mean, amateurism in sports has not been amateur for quite some time. It went from, you know, break evens in something that the amateur model was commendable when it started and giving opportunities for athletes to continue in college to play. But then it became a $1 million industry. Then it became a multi-billion dollar industry. And it's just a completely different world than what we were living in even 10, 15, 20 years ago. And you want to talk, it's a different planet than it was back in 1984 when the Supreme Court ruled that conferences and schools could individually negotiate television deals. And that is when the business started booming. And you're trying to put Pandora in the box, but the athletes are starting to realize like, hey, we have a voice now and we can make significant change. And there are things that we would like on top of our scholarship and our stipend. And name, image, and likeness, I think, is a great place for all of that. And group licensing for their name, image, and likeness. I don't see any issue with that. And I don't think it would be a detriment to the amateur model if it was. But the big fight is going to be, how much power do they get? Will they continue to want more power? And obviously they will. But that is where, you know, we read the tweet thread about, they won't be a legitimate union because it can't be.
Right. That's not within the realm of possibility, and it seems far too difficult to achieve anyways.
Yes. And there's a lot of issues that are going on, you know, outside of this. And like this texture points out, like, how does Title IX fit into all of this? And that's where name, image, and likeness are the way to go. Is that name, image, and likeness are individuals, and every student athlete would be having the opportunity to go and do that. And to say that, you know, a female athlete would be at a significant disadvantage. I mean, look, we're talking about name, image, and likeness really and truly benefiting guys like Trevor Lawrence or Penei Sewell or Justin Fields, you know, those types of names. Just like in women's basketball, Sabrina Ionescu, she was a generational talent and she had a brand behind her. And she could have benefited on that as well. And that's where name, image, and likeness is the way to go. And it's not paying every athlete.
Well, and honestly, like, you think about what she did for the university, what she did for Oregon women's basketball, the attention she brought to that program. And then a couple games into her WNBA career, goes down with a severe ankle injury. Now, by all accounts, she'll recover from it and she'll be fine. But what if that sets her entire career back and she got nothing financially for it?
Yeah, but where we're at right now is they're trying to find a way to play college football. And I think that just sitting there and plastering these guys who are as part of the We Are United and We Want to Play movement, they make no mistake, they do want to play. And I think that paring this down and having that joint release last night it could be a game changer in this, in that financials were not part of that, right? Financials were not part of it. They're just saying, hey, this is more about health and safety in 2020 right now.
Yeah, there wasn't anything about a revenue split in there. They're like,
there shouldn't be.
Right. Put that aside. Let's reconsider what is really reasonable at this point in time.
Yeah. And now we're going to see, in all likelihood, a wave of conferences moving towards a spring schedule in the Power Five. You know, there's already reports this morning that could be happening. In that, you know, that's why the conference commissioners are meeting last night, today, and I saw somewhere that they're expected to meet tomorrow as well, is because they need to have a united front on this, because they can't start fighting within themselves and splitting apart and fracturing and having, you know, whether it's two or three conferences go to a spring schedule while the other ones sit there and say, no, we're going to play in the fall. They're trying to find a unified front on all of it. We'll have more on this with Kyle Bonagura, ESPN's Pac-12 writer. He'll join us at the top of next hour. Coming up next, though, time to let it rip. Case of the Mondays, 503-250-1080. What's grinding your gears? Dusty and Cam on the Fan.
It's everyone's favorite day.
When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
What do you have to complain about?
Monday. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
A Case of the Mondays, part of Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On 1080 The Fan.
503-250-1080. That is the Fan text line. Dusty and Buck with ya.
Let's get it.
Let it rip. What's grinding your gears on this Monday morning? Look, for a lot of folks out there, it's going to be college football being the case of the Mondays, because it is looking less likely than ever that a fall season will happen, and spring is going to be an option. And look, I heard, Marty McGee, Ryan McGee from Marty McGee? He was on with Go Look and Wingo, but that is no more, with Bart Scott and Rothenberg this morning, and he was saying that, like, look, spring football can happen and it will happen because they need it to go down. It is, what does the fall of 2021 look like? And that is going to be the massive question about it, because it's not a lot of time off It is not a lot of time off.
No, this
to go
might
from collision sport to collision sport.
It might be the kind of thing that it takes us 2 years to get back on the cycle we prefer. And I know that that's not what people want to hear, but if the solution for right now is moving football to the spring, then in spring we'll have to find the solution for what the fall is going to be.
Yes, 100%. And that's got to be a case of the Mondays for a lot of folks out there. Brooks Koepka definitely has a case of the Mondays. As he took,
oh boy,
he took shots on Saturday following his round at the leaderboard, where he was looking at it and he was asked, "How does he feel?" And he was what, two shots off the lead heading into the final round yesterday. And he said, "Well, you know, looking at the guys in front of me, I feel pretty good about my chances." He has been a two-time champion of the PGA back to back. And he said, "What? There's only one?"
It's like, there's not a lot of guys up there who've won a major. I mean, I guess DJ has one.
Yeah, which he does.
And he does.
Well, then Brooks Koepka went out yesterday and imploded on the golf course. He dropped 18 spots.
Did you see how many people had a worse round than Brooks Koepka on Sunday?
No.
Just one. He had the second to worst round of the entire, of anybody that was remaining in the field on Sunday. Four over par.
Yeah, that is a brutal, brutal round.
Only Jim Herman did worse.
Old Jimmy Herman, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. But that was the funny part about that. I am all for, I like that Brooks talks.
Me too.
I think it's good for golf in a sport where nobody says anything to ruffle any feathers. And
agreed,
it's all kind of passive aggressive type stuff. Or when you see a guy who does get upset, it's like Bryson DeChambeau getting mad that their cameras are following him after a bad shot. And it's like, all right, dude, we get it. You know, I wonder how baseball players feel when a camera's all locked on them after they strike out,
yeah,
to end the inning with bases loaded, or a quarterback who throws an interception late in a game, right? Nobody likes that, but it's part of the gig. And he doesn't hold back. But one thing I've always loved about Brooks is that until yesterday, he backed it up.
And that changed a little bit. I also liked that. So now, of course, Brooks making a few waves, which feels like it's a little bit unusual or out of the ordinary for golf. That's why everyone is like, well, Brooks said what? But so now all the other golfers were being asked about it. And then I like when Rory was asked about it. He goes, you know, I was actually kind of taken aback by Brooks's comments because, well, I mean, you know, DJ won 21 tournaments on tour. That's like three times as many as Brooks has. So I'm just jumping in the fray being like, dude, don't mention DJ only has one. He's got three times as many victories as you.
All right. Case of Mondays is rolling in 503-250-1080. Having to do something that should have been done when we originally did the job. Now I'm waking up, walking up and down three flights of stairs with doors and cutting a quarter inch off of the bottom. I work with some lazy SOBs. That sucks. I'm assuming that you work in construction there. And a quarter inch on your door, one, that seems like it'd be pretty hard to like just shave off a quarter of an inch on the bottom because your margin for error is not that great on that. But that is one of the things when you live in a home, it doesn't matter if you own it, rent it, whatever. If you're just staying in it like an Airbnb and you have a door that just sticks just a little bit, it's one of those minor inconveniences in life that will just drive you up the wall.
And one of those things that I know I cannot fix on my own. Somebody else probably can easily. I cannot.
Yeah, I hate it when there's just like a little thing like that. We used to have that with, I took our front door of our old house off completely because it was, there was like a little bit, one of those like little sticks on the door frame, and I had to take it off completely and then put it back on just so all of the bolts slid down the right way, because you couldn't just do it individually. The door was leaning just that right way. But I felt very accomplished after I did fix the door.
As you should.
Doing little things in the home where your family like thinks you're Bob Vila and you have done some sort of great service in the world of home repair when all you had to do is something very minor.
Yeah.
I love that. It makes me totally feel like, you know, I'm an adult and I'm a dad at that point.
There you go.
Fixing stuff is what it's all about. You got any case of the Mondays, Buck?
No. I guess I do have a small one. Last week I had an eye appointment. I had this like this little like bump that popped up on my eyelid that was, I guess, related to an allergy that got a little bit infected. But it's fine now. It doesn't cause me any pain or harm, but I do need to get it like drained or removed, which that never sounds great. So no. I found this out on Wednesday. They're like, we can do it right now. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, what does that include? They're like, well, your eyelid might bleed a little bit. It might bruise a little bit. I'm like, that doesn't sound like I can play golf an hour after this appointment. They're like, no, you should probably stay inside after this today. I said, okay, I will postpone this appointment until, or, you know, getting this little like thing removed until next Wednesday. Well, now I have to miss golf this Wednesday to get my eye taken care of, which is probably a good idea, but still they're going to put something sharp inside my eyelid and cut it open.
Dude,
so,
are you going to wear an eye patch?
No, I don't think so. They said the recovery time is about 10 minutes.
That might be one of those 10 minutes, then go golf. What do you mean?
Well, 10 minutes till I can like drive again, but I shouldn't be like outside or it's getting irritated.
Well, become eye patch guy.
Maybe. You think I can golf with one eye?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, you rely on other people to watch where your ball goes anyways, you know?
That's true.
And I don't know if that might hurt or help your putting.
Yeah, my putting hasn't been great recently.
I mean, it'll force you to keep your eye on the ball because you'll literally only have one eye
only
on the ball.
Only one of them to do it.
Booyah. See, spin this to a positive direction there, Buck.
Okay.
Spin it, baby. Like, you could be
eye
worse.
Eye patch guy.
And this will be part of next hour's content. One of my legitimate cases of the Mondays. My most favorite and beloved team is the most hateable team in all of sports. And I'm starting not even to like the cut of their jib. And it's bothering me to my core. But coming up next, Pac-12 ESPN writer Kyle Bonagura. He broke a couple stories over the weekend, including the Big Sky postponing their conference play until the spring. The latest on the Pac-12 and the We Are United front and how the conference handled their conversation with the players on Thursday evening. Bonagura of ESPN joins us next. Dusty and Cam on The Fan.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.